Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon on this Friday afternoon. 51551 ray at rte.ie. He had a good life. 96. Tony Bennett would have been celebrating his 97th birthday in a couple of weeks' time. Diagnosed with Alzheimer's back in 2016. I was just looking at it. He had his first hit 72 years ago in 1951. He's just been around forever. He was a big presence in our house because my dad was a drummer and he was into jazz and he loved what Tony Bennett did. So he's been ever present in my life. And you'll recognise a lot of the songs. And he was admired by his peers, which is always a good thing, isn't it? It's always a good sign when the people who do what you do say that you do it better. See what I'm saying? Like Frank Sinatra said of Tony Bennett, "For my money, Tony Bennett is the best singer in the business. He excites me when I watch him. He moves me. He's the singer who gets across what the composer has in mind and probably a little bit more." That's what Frank Sinatra said about Tony Bennett back in 1965. He was born Anthony Dominic Benedetto in Queens, August 3rd, 1926. He sang from an early age. He also painted and drew, and he became quite a good painter in adult life. That's a thing I didn't know about him. Where did he get the name Tony Bennett? Well, you can see Anthony Benedetto, but his first stage name wasn't Anthony Benedetto. It was Joe Barry. For some reason. And then in the late 40s, he was spotted by Bob Hope. And Bob Hope didn't like his stage name. So he said, "Nah, I don't like the Joe Barry thing. You're going to be called Tony Bennett. So 51 was his first hit. 1953, one of his signature tunes, Rags to Riches.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care. And though my pocket may be empty, I'd be a millionaire."
And Shane mentioned on the news he won 20 Grammy Awards. Two of them were for this song from 1962.
I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill, it calls to me.
In that year, he was described by John S. Wilson, his voice was, "The voice that is the basic tool of Mr. Bennett's trade is small, thin, and somewhat hoarse, but he uses it shrewdly and with a skillful lack of pretension." There. So he had longevity, and he did duets as part of an MTV Unplugged in the 90s, and then in the noughties, he hooked up with a number of singers, including Lady Gaga.
She gets too hungry for dinner at 8.
I'm starving.
She loves the theater, but she never comes late.
I never bother with people that I hate.
That's why the lady is a tramp.
And of course, he was featured in Amy, the Amy Winehouse documentary. That is a mutual friendship and respect.
My life a wreck, you're making up.
You know I'm yours for just the taking.
I gladly surrender.
Amy Winehouse and Tony Bennett. There's a lovely little story in his obituary in the New York Times. He's quoted as saying, "I like the funny things in life that could only happen to me now. Once when I was singing Kurt Vile's Lost in the Stars in the Hollywood Bowl with Basie's band and Buddy Rich on drums," he liked to drop a few names, "a shooting star went falling through the sky right over my head and everyone was talking about it. And the next morning, the phone rang. It was Ray Charles, who had never met, calling from New York. He said, "Hey, Tony, how did you do that, man?" And he hung up. There you go. The last recording we can find is from 2020, from his apartment. He was 93 at the time.
In other words, hold my hand.
Nice. The late Tony Bennett. He's left a great legacy of music from 7 decades in the business.
And in case you wonder, wake up, kiss the good life goodbye.
We might squeeze another Tony Bennett song before we finish up today. Record numbers watched the Irish women's team's opening game on the telly yesterday. 511,000 television viewers, equating to a 77% share at 11 o'clock of a Thursday morning. There you go. What does that say about anything? Well, I tell you what it does say: how popular they are and how enthused we are about the fact that they're appearing in a World Cup for the first time. And it was streamed 360,000 times on the RTE player, so it has broke all sorts of records for a live event this year, and we're into July. So that's great. Yeah, you've heard about it. It's a big weekend in the cinema. Barbie versus Oppenheimer. I don't know who came up with that. It's ridiculous. The apples and oranges. You can't compare. Anyways, I see David Kelly, knowing that it's going to be a big weekend in cinemas around the country. He says, just reminding people, putting your empty popcorn boxes, cups, cans, etc. in the bin after screenings will be a big help to the staff in cinemas this Barbenheimer weekend. Anyway, that's sound advice from David. The mess that some people leave behind after watching a film and they walk past a bin as they leave. Yeah, there you go. We have fallen under the cult of Barbie, and we will be talking about it before the end of the show. A Dublin dancer features in the movie. He dances with Ryan Gosling, as in Ken. And when we were over in Sligo, we meant to talk to a lady who is one of the biggest collection of Barbie dolls in Ireland, maybe the world. So we'll be catching up with her as well. And Andrew Ridgely today. Andrew Ridgely, ladies and gentlemen, on the show today. Him, one half of Wham. And if you've seen the lovely, and it is lovely and it's loving, betrayal of Wham in the Netflix documentary, you'll be interested in that. And you'll be interested in it anyway. Because I didn't know that they had this lovely friendship, a loving friendship, Andrew Ridgely and George Michael, which went back to when they were 12. And the documentary tells that story. Anyway, we'll be talking to Andrew Ridgely about that and other things coming up very shortly. Good news! Dublin Zoo is slashing ticket prices for this weekend only. It's offering a 25% discount for tickets bought online for visits tomorrow and Sunday. What are they celebrating, you ask? Wait for this. They're celebrating the midway point of school summer holidays. Ah, come on. Ah, lads. Like, back to school ads have been on for weeks, which depresses me, I have to say. The zoo will put on special talks over the weekend for visitors to learn more about the animals and their habitats. And the offer is only available for tickets booked online, 25% off, adult, child and family tickets only. So that's something that's happened at the weekend. Of course, the other big thing is the All-Ireland Hurling Final, which is a brilliant prospect, even for neutrals. Kilkenny take on Limerick, and there's two great pieces, one by Sarah Slater and one by David Raleigh in the Times today. And David hooks up with Pat the Bog Carroll, who is one of the biggest Limerick fans. He's a super Limerick fan, or even a super fan from Limerick. I spotted a great video of Pat the Bog Carroll and his mate, Pa the Handsome, from 2019. And there's great quotes from the Bog, as he's called locally. He says, "We have the sombrero ready and a new flag to be unfurled on the day. We've changed the phrase 'In God we trust' to 'In John we trust.'" And a picture of Limerick's manager, John Kiley, underneath it. It's freshly made for its virgin voyage to Croker, says the Bog. And what about the roar for four, the four in a row? The Bog says, "I was talking to a curry man there lately and he was saying Limerick will do five in a row. And I replied that you can't win five in a row unless you win four in a row. So we'll try and win the four and go after the five after that," which makes complete sense from the Bog. And he says, "I think Limerick are good enough, but Kilkenny are Kilkenny. And this is a better Kilkenny team than last year. And you'll always earn it to win any match against Kilkenny. Not to mind in All-Ireland," says the Bog. I want to talk to the Bog. Anyway, you would have heard this earlier on. Killian Buckley, who scored Kilkenny's winning goal to claim the Leinster title against Galway, he has a busy weekend. He's getting married on Saturday. And then he's playing an All-Ireland hurling final on Sunday. And Walter Walsh, who's his best man, he's getting married next weekend. Now, how did that happen? I want to know how it happened. How did that happen? So you're playing on the county team and you're arranging to get married. And what? I don't know. It's probably not this at all. And it probably makes complete sense to Killian and his bride-to-be. But it could have been that the bride-to-be was organising things and she was going, "Yeah, we get married. Yeah, that Saturday. Yeah, the 22nd of July. Oh, yeah, well, yeah, great. As long as we get, yeah, it's great. And then when he looked at the calendar a few weeks ago, he realised that, oh, right, I have to play for Kilkenny in the All-Ireland Hurling Final the day after. Anyway, that's a busy weekend, isn't it, for Killian Buckley? If you have a busier weekend than him, let us know. 51551 ray@rte.ie. "San Francisco was a great song for slow dance during the show band scene in Ireland," says that person. "What a singer Tony Bennett was. Brings back fabulous memories in my childhood home as my father loved him and he sang them all for us along with the record player. Thanks for the memories, Tony. You're a legend and a gentleman." R.I.P. And Ray, Frank Sinatra also once said, "Tony has the best pipes in the business," says Vincent, who is in Boston. How are you doing, Vincent, in Boston? 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, Tony Bennett. I saw Tony Bennett at the National Concert Hall. He asked for the mics to be turned off and he sang "I Left My Heart in San Francisco." It was the best performance I ever heard, says that person. And Ray, another Ray, says, "I wouldn't be interested in Barbenheimer. Give me Up Impossible any day." Are we going? Is this the beginning of something now where we're going to be combining the names of movies who are out on the same day? Yeah, that's probably going to happen, isn't it? 51551 ray@rte.ie. We're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. Great prize this week, and thanks so much to the Kingsley in Cork, the Kingsley Hotel. They've given us each day a 2-night stay for two people, and you get to go to the restaurant for dinner on one of the evenings. You also get a luxurious Kirsten Florian Nordic Zen experience at the spa at the Kingsley. The beautiful bedrooms down there, it's by the River Lee, within walking distance from the buzzing city of Cork, to do whatever you want to do, shopping, socialising, cultural attractions, all just a few steps away. TheKingsley.ie. Thanks very much, The Kingsley. Now, here's your qualifying question on this Friday afternoon. What major movie based around a doll is out in the cinemas this weekend? Is it Barbie or Cindy? What major movie based around a doll is out in the cinemas this weekend? Is it Barbie or Cindy? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. Good luck with that.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, Wham! The Singles, Echoes from the Edge of Heaven has all the hits and it's out now. Bad Boys, Club Tropicana, Wake Me Up Before You Go Go, Freedom, Last Christmas, Everything She Wants, I'm Your Man, all there. And of course, there's the wonderful new documentary which landed last week or the week before on Netflix about Wham's meteoric rise to fame. Andrew Ridgely started the band with his good friend George Michael, and Andrew is on the line now. How are you doing, Andrew?
Yes, well, thanks, Ray. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, that's Edge of Heaven there playing out in the background. Congratulations on the documentary. It's very good. Very, very good. Are you happy with
it? Yeah, very much so. Quite overwhelmed by the response, in actual fact. You know, I think universally it's been almost universally received with even greater warmth and affection and than perhaps we might have imagined. And I think it's touched people in a way that that hadn't perhaps expected. Chris Smith, the director, I think has been very clever in contextualizing the account of Wham by Our Friendship, which, you know, is an authentic representation because essentially, you know, Wham was so inextricably about our youth and our friendship as we grew up, that the two things are wholly entwined. And then to use just George's voice and my own as the narration, I think also gives it an intimacy and a conversational casualness. People have said that they feel that they're listening. It sounds very present.
Yes, yeah. And you get a real sense of that beautiful friendship, love between yourself and George Michael.
Yes, I think Chris has been very... he's come as close as anyone, I think, to identifying the kind of unique aspect of Wham that made it so attractive and perhaps stood it apart from some of its contemporaries. And that was essentially that bond of friendship.
And what age were you when you met, Andrew?
We were 12. It was the second year of secondary school. But I think it was 1974, in fact. So,
and,
yeah.
And he was the new boy. Were you asked to mind him or did you opt to mind him?
Well, I was the only one that did put their hand up, but I put my hand up. Yeah, the teachers, as I'm sure lots of your listeners are aware of, that teachers always wanted a mentor for the new kid. So, yeah, I put my hand up. I was the only one that put my hand up. So it was sort of a sealed deal.
And what was it? What was it that made you put your hand up on that day in 1974?
Simply because I'd never had a new boy, a new pupil entrusted to me. And I think probably thought it might relieve the boredom of school, to be honest.
And there's lovely footage of you as you set out to be pop stars. And you refer to George Michael as Yog. Is it Y-O-G?
Yeah.
Why Yog?
Well, the Greek pronunciation of his name and any Greek speakers amongst your listeners and must forgive me, but his name was Yorgo Panaotu, and he was introduced to the class as Yorias, and no one had any idea what that was. And his family called him Yorgo, and that sounded like yogurt. So which he wasn't very keen on, and then it was shortened to Yog. So, and he was always Yog to his close friends from that point forward.
The director was very lucky that your mum was an avid, nearly obsessive collector of clippings in her scrapbooks.
Indeed, yeah. There are 51 of them and 51. They are a fantastic, they're a fantastic resource to refer to and to give substance to a lot of the circumstances around pivotal moments in our career. So a wonderful thing to have, and I hope at some point to be able to present them in some form to our fans and the public.
What a great archive. What a great exhibition. At what stage then, yourself and Yog, 12 years old, doing the things that 12-year-olds do, and then into your teenage years, you were a bit of a tearaway. George's dad thought you were a bad influence, all beautifully depicted in the documentary. At what stage then did music become a part of your lives?
Oh, well, almost instantly, really, from the day we met. We were obviously finding out what each other's likes and dislikes were, and it soon became very clear very quickly that we shared a really intense and broad love of music and contemporary music. And so that was one of the pillars upon which our friendship was based, that and a very puerile shared sense of humour.
There's some lovely home videos of you messing around, and it's really endearing. So then Wham was, the name came out of something that happened in a club one night. You released your first single, didn't do much. Second single, didn't do much. It was languishing at 42. then you get that call to go on Top of the Pops, isn't it?
Yeah, it was making its way up the charts after a stroke of good fortune getting a TV show, a kids' TV show on a Saturday Superstore.
Right.
But it had stalled at number 42, and Top of the Pops would debut new entries into the top 40, but you had to be in the top 40, and we were tantalizingly close, but you know, but it might as well have been a million miles away. And then another act drops out, and I'm led to understand that it was Waheed that had to drop out for some reason, and we were the next highest riser, and so we got the call. I may or may not be true that it was Waheed, but I was informed of that last night, in actual fact. But
right.
So that was the big break. Obviously, you know, Top of the Pops was, for those that don't know, was the only chart show. It was the only music show aside from the old Grey Whistle Test, and it was certainly the only pop orientated music show on TV. And it attracted viewerships of up to, I think, 15 million at its peak. It would obviously would average sort of between 8 and 11, I think. And so it was a huge opportunity to present yourselves to the British public, and they took to us very, very quickly after that appearance. So
if anybody go to YouTube and watch the first performance of Young Guns by Wham.
Hey sucker, well, I haven't seen your face around town a while, so I greeted you with a knowing smile. When I saw that girl upon your arm, I knew she'd won your heart with a fatal charm. I said, soul boy, let's hit the town, send a hey boy. What's that?
And it just jumped off the screen, that performance, because the youthful energy, good looking, just there was a freshness and a rawness about the whole thing.
Yes, I think there was. Amateurishness, actually, was what I think I'd define it. It was certainly authentic. The dance routine and the presentation was born out of our PAs that we undertook, because Innovision felt that we needed to build up some sort of fan base and project ourselves when we didn't have TV and radio on our sides and doing it for us. So we went around the country performing in various clubs, and we conceived the routines from dance moves that we developed on the alternative new romantic dance floors of clubs, of the suburban clubs of London. So
yeah.
It was amateur, but it was authentic, and it was very different from that which anyone else was doing.
Lovely little details in the documentary, which is available on Netflix, like George Michael was colourblind. might explain some of the outfits, but what's your excuse?
unfortunately, I don't have that excuse. Yes, a momentary lapse of sanity, let's call it.
Now, the people remember Club Tropicana, the video was shot in Ibiza. That was a big song for you. But it was also a big moment in your relationship with George, because he came out to you when you were filming the video in Ibiza.
Yeah, Club Trop was the single that allowed us to throw off the constraints or the last vestiges of teenage rebellion, the trilogy that was Wham Rap, Young Guns and Bad Boys, which rather sort of painted us as class warriors with a social conscience, which Wham Rap was purely a comment on our wry look at the circumstances of sort of worklessness, and rather painted ourselves into a corner with Bad Boys. George hated it because he felt that he was compelled to write it as a formula to follow up on the success of Young Guns, which is true, and he disliked the artistically the fact that he had to do it. It's a good track. It's a good dance track, and it sounds really good, but he disliked the inauthenticity of it and the slightly contrived nature of it. But Club Trop liberated us from all of that. We threw those shackles off and became, as I say in the documentary, you know, that was the unveiling of Wham in its purest form. Mm. Jörg chose that moment after we'd shot the video, and we were having a couple of days R&R after the shooting of the video to tell Shirley and I that he felt he was homosexual rather. He was still seeing women at the time. He had girlfriends, which he continued to do, but I think he come to the realization that he was a gay man rather than a bisexual one at that point. Not that it made any difference to any of us, but he felt that he needed to tell us.
And Wham's, I suppose, audience, their fans, were predominantly young teenage girls. And did he discuss with you how the fans would react if he came out to them?
No, I think whilst we had a lot of teenage girls as fans, yeah, there are a lot of other fans besides. Mm. But no, the only things that mattered with regard to him telling us of his sexuality, breaking that news, really was the context of us, and actually that of his relationship with his dad. I felt, and I think he felt to a degree, that there wasn't a great deal perhaps that we might lose as Wham from an announcement, certainly in the UK, but nevertheless he was more conscious of potential problems that might cause. Mm. But the main issue was that we were very fearful of how his dad might, right. might respond.
So and which is lovely, beautifully depicted again in the documentary, is he was living a lie, and he looked up to you because you were completely comfortable in your skin. You had things that he didn't have. Is that fair enough to say?
Yeah, sure it is, and he had things I didn't have.
Yes, of course.
Certainly, I think with regard, and he says it himself in the documentary. I think he saw the fact that I was confident and fairly much at ease with myself, and had a certain idea of myself. You know, he didn't, and I think to a degree that was in some ways a consequence of him being Jorgo Panayotu and not, you know, an English kid with an English name growing up. It was always my dad, he was born in Alexandria in Egypt. His mom was Italian, his dad was Egyptian Yemeni, and their family name was Zachariah, but dad changed that when he came to when he joined the RAF, and so I grew up as, you know, Andrew Ridgeley, with an absolute concrete notion of being English, and I don't think Jörg had that. You know, he was in 1974 in this British English secondary comp. Jorgos Panayotu was not, you know, no one knew what the hell, no one even knew how to pronounce it. So yeah. I think that was a factor in his struggle to form a self identity, and of course that was assisted by the persona he created, which he also mentions, that allowed him to become the artist he became, which was George Michael.
Yeah, and in the documentary it says, certain in his music, not so much in his personal life. When was the moment, Andrew, when you realised that your friend Jörg, who you were messing around with and having the crack with, that's Irish crack as opposed to, you know, the other thing. When did you realise?
I don't think he existed then, right?
Yeah. When did you realise that he was a musical genius? Because we now know that George Michael was a musical genius.
Yeah, fairly early on, really. His even to the extent of or back as far as Young Guns, because we needed a hit single after the relative failure of Wham Rap. Mm. And we had a couple of songs that we demoed that were, they might have been album tracks, but they weren't singles. And then he came and pulled the rabbit out of the hat with Young Guns, and that was a real quantum leap in songwriting ability and sophistication. And then he did it again with Bad Boys, and it was became clear that he had that ability and knack to do that, and a talent that far outstripped mine. So the decision for him to take on the songwriting duties was an obvious one, and one that we understood would facilitate our aims and aspirations to make Wham the biggest band it could be.
You were constantly being quizzed when you appeared on chat shows and other things about your bitterness. They constantly ask you, you know, are you bitter that George's doing all the writing? And, you know, I get a sense that you weren't at all, and you were reveling and celebrating the success of your best friend.
Well, you have a very acute sense, Ray, because, yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, I had nothing to resent or be bitter about. I was realising a firmly held ambition, a childhood ambition, really, of being in a band with my best friend. And I was thrilled at his development as an artist. It was as an amazing thing to witness and to be a part of. And, you know, he was my best friend. I couldn't help but be absolutely over the moon for him and the successes and the achievements that he attained gathered along the way. Yeah, so...
I'm just playing this in the background, Andrew, because is another sort of pivotal song, isn't it? Careless Whisper.
You know, it was a song that sat slightly outside of the kind of songs that we were writing. The sort of songs that defined Wham, and it was always a bit of an outlier. It was a track that. It was one of the first three tracks that we wrote, and it was I'd been mucking around with chord inversions, and I said to Jörg, you know, I've got this chord sequence that I think would really lend itself well to a ballad, which wasn't the sort of thing that we were writing at all. They weren't the sort of tracks that we were envisaging our music as at that point in time. So it was always whilst we knew it was the jewel in the crown, we always wondered. Certainly, initially, how we might ultimately, made public. So, as his career developed, and it became obvious, his songwriting developed, I think it became obvious that he was one day going to have to step beyond Wham to fulfil his potential and as a songwriter and as an artist. Careless Whisper was the obvious springboard. For him to do that. And so when he asked me, it was at that point in time, I couldn't see any reason why not. It didn't really fit into Wham's arc of the sorts of songs and tracks that we were writing and recording and creating for Wham. Nevertheless, you know, it was a shared song, and it was on Make It Big, and it was a Wham track featuring George Michael in the States. It was very much a song that we shared, and we both wrote it. So it was and George was always conscious of that. So but it was the perfect
transition, I suppose. Transition, wasn't it, from Wham?
Yeah, it was the first step on that transition. Yeah, that's right.
People will be surprised to hear that Wham only existed for 4 years, and you had the final concert in Wembley, 1986, in front of 75,000 fans. How long did that go on for? That was it. A full day concert.
We had a couple of support acts, so it was a fairly long day for the fans. I remember, I thought we were on for an hour and a half, a couple of hours maybe. Obviously fans were queuing up from God knows when to get into to get the best spots. So it was a glorious day. The sun shone, and it was a real atmosphere of celebration and festival.
And what about the emotions on that day for you, knowing that this wonderful experience, this dreamlike 4 years, was coming to an end?
Well, as I said, it really rather felt far more celebratory than having any sense of sadness or conclusion. It was really only when we took the last bow and turned around and walked off stage that the realization that wow, that actually is it. Mm. You know, that it all stops here. But in the build up to the show, it was one of anticipation and excitement. And even during the show, the context and the feeling of it was one of such sort of celebration and festivity that there was no room to consider any kind of element of sorrow or sadness about the whole affair, because it was just too much of a good time.
Yeah. Just while we're in Wembley, let's go back a couple of years, because last week it was the anniversary of Live Aid. And George famously sang Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me with Elton John. You did backing vocals. What are your memories of that day? Because that was one of the biggest days in music history, really, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And it was one of the great gatherings of, you know, the world's music icons. To find oneself on stage standing next to Freddie Mercury, David Bowie, Bono, Elton John, it was quite an extraordinary experience. And the funniest bit was that there were only two mics, so everyone was squabbling over. It might only have been one mic, actually. Yeah. It's hilarious.
I saw George taking over the vocals, doing a brilliant job, and the others started looking at him sort of a little bit enviously and going, he's hugging the mic there, let me in. You know, people like Sting and Bono. Yeah, amazing. What I learned from the documentary, of course, Band Aid preceded Live Aid, the Band Aid song, Do They Know It's Christmas, kept Last Christmas, your song, brilliant Christmas song, off the top of the charts. What I didn't know was that you and George decided to donate all the profits from Last Christmas to the Ethiopian cause.
Yeah, that is the case. We'd witnessed famines in East Africa previously, through the late 60s and 70s, and it seemed a right and proper thing to do when the industry was pulling together. And so, yes, that's the case. We donated our altars from Last Christmas.
Yeah, and on Christmas, of course, it was Christmas Day when George died back in 2016. Remind us how you found out about his death.
Well, I got a phone call from his sister, but, you know, I don't choose to remember Jörg in his death. You know, I choose to remember him in the full flow of life. And as I said at the tribute that we gave, Shirley Pepsi and I gave at the Brits, he left the best of himself for us, and the best of himself was his music and his art. So, you know, when I think of him, I think of the majestic career he had and his immense talent and the beauty of his voice and his songwriting.
Right. Well, that's the perfect way to finish up, Andrew. Wham! The singles, Echoes from the Edge of Heaven, all the hits there, and Wham! The documentary, highly recommended from here. It has a big heart and a great soul as well, and it's a lovely story of a friendship that blossomed into world beating pop stars. Andrew Ridgely, thanks so much. Thanks.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Ray. Take care. All the best.
Wake me up before you go.
Documentary is on Netflix. Lovely guy, Andrew Ridgely. Bit of this, just a little bit of this before we continue.
music dies. Something in your eyes.
It's very sad. He had a lot more to give, hadn't he, George Michael? A lot more to give musically. Anyway, there you go. Now, we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our quiz. The qualifying question today is, what major movie based around a doll is out in the cinemas this weekend? Is it Barbie or Cindy? 0818715925, 0818715925. We have a great prize. It's a two-night stay for two people in the Kingsley Hotel in Cork. 0818715925.
Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
You can't avoid it. You can't avoid it.
Let's go, Barbie.
Yeah, we're in the midst of Barbie fever. Biggest movie of the year so far. It hit the cinemas today. And amongst all the real-life dolls in the movie, you will see an Irish Ken dancing the night away. Adam Fogarty is from Dunshaughlin, County Meath, and he dances alongside Ryan Gosling in Barbie the movie. And Adam joins us in studio. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
This is very exciting.
Very exciting weekend. Yeah, absolutely.
You have the peroxide blonde hair. You have the pink hoodie.
Yeah. I do. I came prepared.
Yeah. You've seen the movie.
I have. I saw it at the premiere. Yeah.
In the Stella.
I did indeed.
Who went with you?
Just myself.
Right.
Yeah, I went with the Primark team and we had an amazing time. Yeah, the film's incredible. So I'm excited for everyone else to see it as well.
Right. So like, we know, people will know, but this isn't a spoiler at all, that we see Barbie in her world and then we see her in the real world.
That's right, yes.
Ken, likewise.
Yes.
So you're one of Ken's mates as such?
I am. I guess I'm just a dancing Ken, right, essentially.
Okay,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And you've danced since you were what? 5?
Oh, literally, yeah, 4 or 5. Yeah, right. Very, very early on, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, you must be very tired.
I am, I'm wrecked. The old gal.
So it was your sister who went to dance classes first, and then that's, you used, right, to tag along.
I used to watch from the side, sitting on my parents' lap, and slowly but surely got into it. And then I was in the class, and I was at the front, and then I was in shows, and it just kind of snowballed from there. Yeah,
right. And how do you get a gig like this? How do you get a job like this?
Well, I just got an email through my agency in the UK, sent off a self tape, and I think 3-4 days later, I was actually in London on set rehearsing. So it was a very quick turnaround. Yeah,
right. Now they've created this magnificent world.
Yes.
Like, it's pink.
Oh, it's
more
magical.
Pink.
Yeah, absolutely.
I read during the week that the supplier of the paint ran out of pink paint.
Yes,
globally.
I heard this.
Right, okay.
Yeah, crazy.
What other stuff can you tell us? Was it, and I heard this morning on Morning Ireland, this is how big it is, they're talking about it on Morning Ireland, that the one day a week on set, everyone had to wear pink.
I heard this too. Now, I don't know. The dancers, we were probably super busy elsewhere.
Right.
But I did see that as well. And I'm sure that was the case. But as you see, I'm wearing pink right now.
Yes.
I was probably in pink anyway.
Yeah.
Just trying to get in the spirit. But yeah, madness.
And then the other thing I heard was that they had a pajama party at the beginning of the shoot.
Yes, I think so.
Right.
To my knowledge, anyway.
Was it fun?
Oh my God, it was incredible. Yeah, like, what a unique experience, you know. I think we'll look back in even like 30 years and see this film as just iconic. You know, that's what it's going to be. So it was incredible, yeah, to be a part of that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can't get their head around it.
Yeah.
You know, because when you hear Barbie the movie, you think, oh, that's a kid's movie.
Right. It's just a different take, I think, on Barbie, which is what's so exciting. I think something that will cater to everybody of all ages. And I think that's what makes it so special. You know what I mean? I think it's going to be great, yeah.
And Ryan Gosling, nice guy.
Lovely guy. Very handsome man. Very, very handsome man.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're saying that he, in some scenes, he robs the scene. He, like, I know it's Barbie the movie, but Ken steals some of the scenes.
Absolutely. He's brilliant. He's genius. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the role he was born to do.
Absolutely.
So it's right. So you went to see it. Did the rest of the family see it?
No, I'm going actually tomorrow night with my parents. So I'm really looking forward to that. Just to get it, to see it from a different perspective as well, and to see it in a more relaxed environment, just with my parents, and enjoy it. You know, I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is it like seeing yourself on that size of screen?
You know what? It's quite bizarre. You never really get used to it, but it's definitely exciting. But it's a bit of like a outer body experience, I guess.
Yeah.
That's why I'm going to go again for a second time. I'll probably see it a few more times, I won't lie.
Right.
But you never get used to that.
And this isn't your first brush with Hollywood. You worked on Disenchanted.
I did indeed, yeah.
Open End is scary.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Which was amazing again. Another really magical film, like an amazing opportunity, especially in Ireland. So yeah, very grateful for that.
So does this mean you'll be moving to Hollywood or...?
Oh, you never know. I spend a little bit of time in LA. I go
maybe
3 times a year and I go over there to train. There's amazing facilities for dance over there. So yeah, I'm over there quite a lot. So you never know. Never say never, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Stay where you are, Adam. Glenda Taylor is in Sligo. Hello, Glenda.
Hello.
Hi, Ray. Hi, nice, Adam.
Yeah, great to talk to you. Listen, tell them how many Barbie dolls you have in your collection. Ah, we lost Glenda. There you go. Hello, Glenda. Hello, Glenda. No, we lost Glenda there. We lost Glenda. So Glenda, I can tell you now, Glenda has over 700
wow
Barbie dolls in our collection. We're going to try and get her back up there. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take a commercial break. Have I got one there? I do. I have a commercial break and we'll try and get Glenda back on the line. Stay where you are, Adam.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
One more time.
Come on, Barbie, let's go party.
I'm a Barbie girl in the Barbie world.
Hello, Glenda.
Hello, Ray. Hi, Adam. How are you?
Good. Take two. Yes, Adam, be well used to that. Yeah. Now, I've told them already, you have 700 Barbies in your collection.
That's right, yes. So started collecting when I was a young girl. There was a popular present from Santa and for birthdays. And then I suppose I started collecting as an adult. Got my first collector doll for a show back in 98. And discovered eBay and credit cards and the rest is history.
Where do you have these 700 Barbies?
So I have a dedicated room in the house. So bright pink walls, shelves, floor to ceiling. And most of them are there, running out of room at the minute.
Right. You have two children.
I do. Two little girls, so 4 and 2. And they're asking questions. Can they get in?
Yes. And what do you say when they... Oh, they're not allowed in. They're not allowed in.
They're not allowed in.
Well, that's very odd, isn't it? Because you have two children and they know that they play with toys. Mammy has a lot of toys, in fact, 700 toys in a room. So they want to play with Mammy's toys. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Total sense. But no, listen, they were very good and Sandy brought them a few little dolls for Christmas. So they have their own toys.
Right.
And I've started the tradition then. Barbie brings out a Christmas doll every year. So I've started buying one for each of them every Christmas. So at least we'll have them start off their little collections.
So you have the Barbie camper van, the airplane, the horse and carriage, the horse box. Of the 700, which is your favourite Barbie?
Oh, I could never say. I know there's different dolls and they all mean something different.
Yeah.
Like I saw the first one I remember getting, I was 4 or 5, I was in hospital. She called my first Barbie. She's in loved condition. But you know, that's one of the first ones. And then I have 2 or 3 dolls by American designers like Bob Mackie.
Yeah.
And they're like really hard to find, so they're fantastic. And I suppose I went to a doll convention in Portugal a few years ago. So I have a one-of-a-kind doll from it. So,
And you see, I love this story. Your most sentimental doll is your bridal Barbie because your husband surprised you with it on your wedding day. Isn't that lovely?
He did. So that would have been, that'd be like a sentimental doll. You know, you could never part with something like that.
Yes.
So thank you.
You have a letter from Barbie as well.
I do. So, yeah, when I was younger, I was all big into projects. So I wrote to Barbie looking for information for this project.
Right.
And she wrote back to me. And not only that, she sent a little toy doll as well. So to me, this was just mind-blown as a young girl that Barbie took the time to write back to me and send me a present.
Have you seen the movie yet?
I think tonight. Right. Going tonight to see it with 2 of my girlfriends. So, yeah, listen, the movie looks fantastic. It looks to be a nice, easygoing escapism movie. I'd say there'd be a nice little touch of comedy in it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's easygoing. It's sort of an assault on the senses, is it? Or is it
mixed emotions, I think.
Mixed emotions.
You're in for a ride, yeah.
Okay, you're right, okay. Glenda Taylor, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy
guys.
It tonight.
Thank you.
Adam Fogarty, thank you and congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Now, Inishtosha now in the pre skeleton Nokta, Kieran O'Farta. Gurmaga, Kieran, thank you very much. Have a good weekend. Lovely text about Andrew Ridgely. He's just a lovely guy, isn't he? Lovely guy. And there was a lovely relationship between him and George Michael. And that Wham documentary is on Netflix. And Jim says I'll come back to Jim. Right, we've 2 quizzers standing by. Press the button there. There you go. And there's a prize. And this week it's 2-night stay at the Kingsley. The Kingsley in Cork. And you get the spa treatment. And it's an ideal location to explore everything that Cork has to offer. The Kingsley.ie. Shopping, socialising, cultural attractions are all just a few steps away from the Kingsley Hotel. Hello, Liam Hyland.
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Not too bad. You're on the road from Portumnah to Limerick.
I am indeed, yeah.
What's the reason for your journey?
So we're having a work outing. I work with Green Rebel. We're having a work outing today in Limerick City. So a bite of food, nothing too dramatic, because I have to be bright and fresh for tomorrow because my wife is heading for Dublin. So I'm parenting the three children solo.
All right. That's fine. What age are the three children?
We've got Keila 6, Amelia's 4, she'll be 5 next month, and Rory is 2.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, that's a handful there.
Yeah.
It is. That will be tiring.
We've got about 66% conformance, and then there's always one that's an Ollie outlier.
An Ollie outlier. That's a great one.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm speaking to a Guinness World Record holder, I believe.
Yes, you are indeed. Oh. I hold the Guinness World Record for the most Gaelic football penalties taken in 1 hour. I set that record on the 2nd of July 2022.
It's quite niche.
It is, but I think, you know, to get into the Guinness or fall into the Guinness World Records, you need to go niche.
Yeah, it's a great achievement.
And then the record stands. Yeah. Is there to be beaten now by anyone?
Right, give us the stats on it then.
So I scored, I took 407 penalties in 1 hour.
Nice.
I scored 224, missed 183. So, on the balance of probability, you know, I did
well.
Sooner than I did.
I
was happy enough with it.
How many balls did you have?
So, I had 8 footballs and I recycled them. So, if the goalkeeper caught one, he'd throw it straight back out to me.
Yeah.
If it went into the goals, the goalkeeper would recycle it out. But if it went wide or over the bar, we'd throw in another football and recycle the old one back out again.
And the most important question, Liam, why?
Well, I never had a Guinness World Record before, and that's the way.
That's the
day of it, yeah.
Okay, that's pretty straightforward, very honest answer. You're up against Tom Mitchell, who doesn't have a Guinness World Record that I know of. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm doing good, Ray. How are you?
Great. What's your plan for the weekend?
I'm working the weekend, Ray. Just heading up to visit friends in Dunloe at the minute. We're just stopped here.
Right.
Just outside Donegal town.
Uh-huh.
My wife and my daughter.
And where are you from, Donegal?
Originally from Galway, near Toomrey.
Yeah, and then you moved up to Donegal, did you?
Move up to Donegal, working the wife.
Yeah, so you're a retired guard.
Retired guard.
But you're working away at what now?
I'm now working at a hotel beside me here in Donegal town called Lochess Castle. It's a 5-star hotel.
Oh, nice.
Just do a few days a week there.
What do you do there?
I'm concierge, the doorman in the hotel.
Look at you.
Meet the guests and...
Yeah.
And arrange history tours and
what a lovely job!
Give advice about the local attraction. It is, yeah.
Yeah,
people in good humour, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and you're there, and it's a two way thing. You're in good form, they're in good form. Everybody's on their holidays. Your big smile on your face. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
So, if you were asked, would you go to see Oppenheimer or Barbie?
I'd be honest, Ray, I'd be Oppenheimer, I think.
You'd be Oppenheimer, yeah. So
I have a daughter here beside me, she'd be a Barbie girl.
She'd be a Barbie girl. That's Anna. How are you, Anna? Anna's just finished her leave insert, and Catherine's the wife. Liam, would you be Barbie, or sorry, is that Anna? How are you, Anna?
Hi.
How did the leave insert go?
I won't talk about it.
Okay, right. Well, you can't do anything about it now. It's done, and that's
it.
Yeah. And you'd be Barbie girl and a wife, Catherine. How are you, Catherine?
Hi, how are you, Ray?
So would you be Barbie or Oppenheimer?
Oh, I'd be Oppenheimer.
Okay, sorry about that, Anna. It looks like the Oppenheimer wins. Let's go to Liam Hyland for his vote. Liam, Barbie or Oppenheimer?
I'd be on the fence, and I'd be dictated to by the committee. So if I was going with the kids, it'd probably be Barbie.
Yes.
But if I was kind of on my own, I'd like to have a look at Oppenheimer. But
yeah.
I believe it's a 3-hour marathon of a movie. Is that
yes.
Right?
I read the reviews. 3 hours, and there's a lot of scenes of just besuited men in rooms having meetings. But great performances because you've obviously
Cillian Murphy,
Matt Damon's in it as well. Robert Downey Jr.'s in it. What's your man's name who plays Einstein? Conti, is that his name? Yeah, he plays Einstein in it, so some great actors in it. Okay, let's get on to the quiz. So three questions each. I give you the category name. You decide if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue, it's more difficult, so you get 2 points. Whoever has the most points is the winner. And if the drawing points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck, Liam, and good luck, Tom. Here we go.
Good luck, Liam. Good luck, Liam.
Okay, Liam. Disco singers for a Friday. That's our first category. Do you want a clue or not?
I'll go without a clue, please, Ray.
Okay, can you name this disco singer?
Looking for some hot stuff, baby, this evening. I need some hot stuff, baby, tonight. I want some hot stuff.
Is it hot chocolate?
It's not hot chocolate, no. No.
Oh, dear.
It's Donna Summer.
Okay.
The clue was, it's the perfect season to be playing this singer's music. Donna Summer, that's Hot Stuff by Donna Summer. Okay, don't fret, don't panic. Early days. Tom, disco.
Yes, Liam. Ray. Sorry, Ray.
Sorry. What you call me? No, it doesn't matter.
I called you Liam.
Tom.
I'm here.
Yeah, I know. I'm here too. Disco singers. Do you want a clue or not?
No, I go for the...
Okay,
no
for
clue.
2 points, with the help of Catherine and Anna, who is this?
Hold up to the bumper, baby. Drive it in between. Hold up to
no.
Me.
No?
The Car Wash is a song, I think. Car Wash?
No, it's not the name of the song, no. Car Wash isn't...
No. Sorry, Liam, no.
No,
sorry.
No idea.
It's
Pull Up to the Bumper.
Sorry, Tom.
Grace Jones it is.
Yeah.
Grace Jones, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right, well, that's an even start. No points on the board. It's not there. So we're on to our second question. Liam, magicians.
I go for no clue.
Okay, you think you know your magicians. Okay, let's see if you can pull this one out of the hat. Here we go, for 2 points.
Many people wonder, what is that? That is, in truth, the world's oldest recorded trick. Oh, some say. Some actually say this. It's a true story. That there's a hieroglyphic in Egypt on a wall of a man doing this trick. I don't know whether it's true or not. I'm just telling you. That's what they think, all right? Hieroglyphic. If it was this far down the wall, it would be a loroglyphic. You know. Now.
Who's that?
I believe it's Paul Daniels.
It is Paul Daniels. Well done, Liam. Yeah, 2 points. Yeah.
Of course.
Not a lot, but you like it. It's not his thing. You like it, not a lot, yeah. Okay, 2 points. Well done, you're on the scoreboard. Tom, magicians. What do you want to do?
I'll have to go, no clue.
No clue, okay. For 2 points, can you name this magician?
As a magician, I try to create images that make people stop and think. I also try to challenge myself to do things that doctors say are not possible. I was buried alive in New York City in a coffin, buried alive in a coffin in April 1999 for a week. I lived there with nothing but water.
Who's that?
My wife says David Copperfield, Ray. I don't think that's right.
David Blaine. Now, you're not out of it yet. You still have to score, but you're not out of it yet. But Liam, you're on two. If you get anything from your final question, you're today's winner. And the category is TV puppets.
Oh, mother of God. Mother. TV puppets?
Yeah.
We'll go for a clue with that one. It's
okay. A feathered friend to many pals. A feathered friend to many pals. For 1 point, who is this? Good luck. If you get this, you're today's winner.
Ernie is under something and over something. Look! That hammock is hanging under the palm trees and over that beach ball. That's it! Ernie must be in the hammock. Found you, Ernie! Come on out! Ooh. Oh no, it's a seal.
Big Bird from Sesame Street.
It is Big Bird, yes. Probably not strictly speaking a puppet, but Big Bird is the correct answer. You get your point. That brings you up to 3. Tom, you can't catch him.
That's
you,
okay.
You
thanks,
can't
Liam.
Catch him.
Thanks, Ray.
Yeah. Have a good weekend.
I'm Ray. He's Liam. You're Tom. Your wife's name is Catherine, and you're no. Okay. Listen. Safe journey, Tom. Lovely talking to you. We're going to send you out a Ray Dash show.
Keep up.
Yeah. And Anna, good luck with the Leaving Cert results. See you, Catherine. See you, Tom. Thanks, bye now. Bye. 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 Bye.
Weekend,
Liam. Yeah. Bye. Liam, you're off to the Kingsley Hotel in Cork, which is great. The Kingsley.ie. You'll have to get somebody to mind the childer. And there's a luxurious Kirsten Florian Nordic Zen experience at the spa in there as well.
That sounds brilliant. Yeah. Fantastic, Ray.
Enjoy the work, too. Good luck tomorrow. Lovely talking to you. Thanks, Liam. Bye now. Bye. Bye. Bye, bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're off to Cork in a moment to talk to Hilary Rose from the Young Offenders. But first, a bit of this. Here we go. Hey, sing along, Hilary.
I am.
The unofficial national anthem of Cork City.
And rightly so. And
rightly so. After all, Frank and Walters. Hilary Rose.
Hello to you.
Hello. Mairead McSweeney, mother of Connor in Young Offenders. This is very exciting.
It is.
So tomorrow in the Cork Opera House, there's a reunion of the cast of Young Offenders. And it's you're hosting it. It's sort of a follow-on from your Live Wild podcast.
Correct.
Right. So it's a live podcast.
So it's a live podcast. So I did season one of the Live Wild podcast last year. And on one of the episodes, I interviewed Chris and Alex, who play Connor and Jock.
Mm.
And it just went down so well. And I thought, God, wouldn't it be so great to get all the cast on to do the podcast? And then I, you know, took it one step further and I went, oh, wouldn't it be so great to get all the cast on stage in front of a live audience and do it that way? Because we've never done a live show for the Young Offenders. And there was such huge demand from theatres and promoters. They all wanted us to do live stuff, but it was really hard to get us all together to write something to tie it all down. And I thought, this is the way to do it. We'll bring it to the audience and to fans. So yes, so tomorrow night, Cork Opera House, Saturday, July 22nd, 8 p.m. We're all going to be in the Cork Opera House live on stage.
Brilliant. Now, just bring us back. When did it start? There was the movie first and then the TV series. When was the movie in cinemas?
Oh my goodness. Would you believe the movie was 2016?
What? Seven years ago?
I know. So the movie came out in 2016. And then I think about a year maybe after that, we started to enter into talks because it had done the festival circuit, done really well. And yeah, BBC picked it up and wanted to make a series out of it. And I suppose the rest is history, really. Like, I mean, we did season 1 to 3. And we did that. We did season 2 and 3 in 2019. So that'll give you an idea. And then we came back again this year to do season 4. So we've wrapped season 4 now. So we're really, really excited about that.
And I'm sure fans are very excited about it. I remember seeing the movie and I just thought, that is genius. And immediately the two lads were stars. And of course, the West Cork countryside star as well. And there are echoes of the storyline in the news at the moment.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? But it's up the north. It's happening in Donegal now.
Yes.
So, I mean, like, you know, like the backdrop for the relationship of Connor and Jock in the movie was that those bales of cocaine had washed up on the Cork shores, which really happened, I think, in the 90s. I'm not quite sure actually when. And yeah, so like you said, it's kind of happening again this week. So I'm taking it as a good omen, Ray.
Yes, yeah. And the lads are all grown up now. So season 4 is going to be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. So like I said, we shot season 2 and 3 back to back in 2019.
Right,
and
4 years ago.
4 years ago. God, that's crazy to even think about.
There were little babies involved.
Yeah. And so we revisit season 4 now a little bit later onwards and we kind of catch up with what's happened in the lads' lives. So it's really nice to be able to take it in a slightly different direction, which is cool.
And there's something very exciting about, because it was a collaboration, co-production, BBC, RTE.
Mm-hmm.
It started on BBC 3 or 4? 3?
3.
3. And it's moved up and it's getting the ultimate promotion now, I believe.
Yeah, it is. We're really, really honoured to have the primetime slot on BBC One. So that's what we're coming back for, which is really, it's brilliant. It's
really
amazing.
That's a big vote of confidence, Hilary.
I know. And everyone's saying, God, are you worried? And I'm like, no, I'm not. But now that everyone's saying, God, are you worried? I'm like, Jesus, should I be worried? Maybe I should be. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, you can think about that when you're doing it or writing it. And your husband writes it.
Correct. Yeah. He's the creator and the writer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, and were you aware that it was going on BBC One when this commission happened?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. Okay, I think, you know, behind the scenes, it was always the plan to take it to BBC One and the time was right to do it. So, yeah. Yeah. We're really lucky.
It's very exciting to be, because you will be introduced to a new audience on BBC One.
Yes, yes. And it's millions more people, which we forget. You know, I suppose for Peter and I in particular, we have this lovely little quiet lifestyle in Cork and we just, you know, make TV and make films. And, you know, we're very much focused on our family life, which is the most important thing for us. And we forget that it goes out to millions of people. So, yeah, we're really honoured to be able to do that.
Just if people are looking for something to watch over the weekend, the original Young Offenders movie, I'm just thinking about it again there. It's a great watch. It's a really good watch. So the Live Wild podcast, It started during lockdown.
It kind of started as a blog just for myself because I was kind of into alternative kind of hippie-ish stuff, I suppose. And it was just a documentation for myself. And then everybody kind of went, Jeannie Max, that's kind of interesting and it might make a really good podcast. And I kind of got shoved into a podcast and I went, yeah, okay, let's do it. If the demand is there for that type of podcast, let's do it. So it's a lovely mix of, I suppose, people living alternative lifestyles. And I don't necessarily mean people living like completely off the grid, although there's a little bit of that as well. But I talk to a lot of kind of entertainers as well, that I always feel entertainers in particular have this entrepreneurial streak and they live kind of somewhat outside the box, you know? So that's what the podcast is about. It's about talking to people who are living alternative lifestyles.
Are you barefoot now or did you put the shoes on to come into studio?
Put the shoes on for the studio. I didn't want to shock the RTE Cork staff. So the shoes are on right now, but they're normally off, I will say.
So once summer hits or April, May, you shed the shoes.
I try as much as possible. I mean, I do keep them on when I'm doing the shopping because, you know, but yeah, look, I like to be barefoot a lot. So I try my best to do that.
I'm jealous of you because every so often, and I don't do it as much as I'd like to do, but when I'm out for a run, I take the runners off and run around.
Oh, lovely.
And there is something, I've described it before, there is something magical about it. There's a connection.
Yeah.
I feel that I actually run better and faster when I'm barefoot. I don't know, it's probably an illusion, but
I think you're onto something because you, you kind of soak up the earth's energy a little bit. So, yeah.
And why did you decide to do it?
The barefoot stuff.
Yeah.
I suppose, you know what, I was kind of just searching for something a little bit deeper. And I got to a point in my life, and I'm sure everybody has come to this point or will come to this point, where I kind of went, is that it? And it was not to sound ungrateful, because I was very grateful for everything. But I kind of went, I just want to explore more sides of myself. I think that's the bottom line. It's more of an exploration of myself.
Interesting. So the barefoot thing, you were doing sea swimming before it was fashionable.
Yeah, I like it. And I love cold water immersion as well. Like into the cold water tank with ice is that's a real testament of who
you are. And you were doing it before your man Wim Hof was on the scene?
No, I actually did a course, a Wim Hof course.
Did you? Right.
Yeah, and it was all kind of breath work and, you know, cold water immersion and how it helps you to reconnect into yourself. And that was amazing, I have to say. Really highly recommend it.
Yeah, because we had a doctor on, an English doctor, who's been studying the effects of cold water swimming and immersion for 20 years.
Wow.
And he has the science to back it up. Because I suppose it's slagged off because it's sort of gimmicky for some people and fashionable and dry robes and all that sort of thing. But the brilliant thing about it in his book, Chill, he outlines the scientific facts that support the hobby, the habit, whatever you call it, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it changes you, the thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. Sometimes you just have to kind of, in a sense, park the science and then check in with yourself and go, this makes me feel good, so therefore I should probably keep on doing it.
There you go. I like the science bit. I like somebody to confirm why I feel good. That's just me. We're different. Hillary, we're different. We're all different. We're all individuals. Yes. So I can hear that you're really pumped up and excited about tomorrow night.
I am. I actually just ran over here to the Cork studio from the Cork Opera House. We were mid rehearsals.
Right.
And yeah, it's a really special event because, you know what, it's very hard to get all of us in the one room, yeah. And we're all going to be together, and it's kind of rare, kind of a special event, and it's just got loads of love and fun.
The three lads, Alex and Chris, Jennifer, Demi, PJ is going to be there.
Yeah.
And will Peter be involved?
Peter's not. Peter's minding the kids.
All right.
Yeah, so, but it will be recorded, so I can play it back to him at some point.
Right, so people will be able to hear it, will they? And
hopefully down the line, yeah, we might. But
is there a Q&A?
There is a Q&A session, yeah, for fans in the audience if they want to come up and, well, you know, in their seats, ask questions, basically, yeah. Of the cast members. And it's worth saying as well that it is open to all ages in the sense that, I mean, it's open to minors as long as they're with guardians. As long as the guardians are okay with the content of the TV series, there's uh-huh. nothing worse than that
okay.
in it. But it is open to all ages because it does have such a broad
Cork
attraction.
Opera House, season 4 is on the way. When will we see it?
Sometime next year. I actually genuinely don't know.
Okay, and any surprises in it? Any new cast members we should know about?
Some, you know, I can't tell you. You nearly got it out of me there. You nearly got it out of me.
See,
right?
I know. I wanted you to say it. And I don't
You're
know how I know,
trickster.
but it's there. There is, yeah, people would be surprised to see somebody there. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
There's a few, yeah.
Yeah, PJ will feel very comfortable in the company of this person. That's all I'll say. That's all I'll say. Right. Hilary Rose, good luck tomorrow night.
Thank you so
much. We'll talk
Ray.
Again. Thanks Thank so much. Bye now. That's Hilary Rose there from Young Offenders, and corkeroperahouse.ie for tickets for that event. Sarah and Cormac are on Drive Time. We are back on Monday. I hope you have a great weekend. Whatever you're doing, do it safely.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.